I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Again, I've just turned it down again because it looks to be resetting. Oh, well, I'm sure I'll notice if it peaks on the actual readout.
Yeah, so having to do a little bit more behind the scenes because AJ is recording at his new secret partner's house.
My new secret partner's house, and I asked them, do you want to come and say hi on pod, which we would allow, you know, could just bring them in, just be like, come say hi. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, you could come in and be like, hello, I'm AJ's partner, like in a silly voice, so that the joke being, it sounds like I've made you up. And they said, no.
Right. Well, never. The thing is, so, I have met your partner, and I just assumed you were doing an actual impression of their voice just then. It wasn't until you said, oh, do a silly voice that,
yeah.
Yeah. So just dropping some more little clues about AJ's secret partner here.
Sorry. So basically the behind the scenes tomfoolery is coming from the fact that for the first time since like probably like 2017, I am not recording off the computer that I usually record to. I've had to bring my microphone over. All of this terribly uninteresting, I suspect, but something
more interesting than the films we've got to talk about. So be my guest, AJ.
I have not had to deal with another Audacity, like another version of Audacity, in probably 7 years. This is a new. And look, I'll be honest with you, Richard. The little spectrum that you stop the you record the like limit for how loud I'm speaking.
Yeah.
It keeps going up, even though I keep setting it to a safe.
Yeah, it's just leave it. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it can be fixed in post.
I'll try and speak quietly.
Speak uncharacteristically like quietly. Garbage.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that'll turn
out
well.
So, welcome to... It'll be like the time you got your ears cleaned and you just spoke at a normal volume for the first time that we've known, in the time that I've known you. You can hear it. I can't remember what episode it is, but you can hear it that AJ's
it
like...
It was Nymphomaniac.
Yeah, and you're just like, hey guys, welcome to the Cop Pop Show podcast. And I was like, this is... This is how everyone else in the world sounds, AJ, because we clean our ears.
I would prefer if people didn't go back and listen to that episode, though, because from memory, it was rife with other audio issues. It was when we were using two microphones, but mixing down
room,
into one track.
Yeah,
and there was a bit of echoing and breathing, loud mouth breathing that I couldn't get rid of. So don't go back and listen
Go back.
Rule of thumb. Don't listen to any episode earlier than 2019. I reckon I have disowned everything before then.
Right.
Maybe 2018. You got some classics
once
in 2018.
You've
got Mission
Impossible.
Once
we moved into separate cities. And then there was some teething issues. But anyway, this is Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Pop Show podcast. I am your host, Richard.
Hello.
I'm joined by my other host, AJ, and he's joined by a secret partner we cannot see.
Don't talk. I don't think they even want us talking about them this much, so
fair enough.
Hopefully they don't listen.
Well, why would they start now? But the we're talking every episode of this podcast, we talk about a different film franchise. This year we're just doing two film franchises, and today we're covering the indie Canadian comedy FUBAR from 2002 and its 2010 sequel. This was suggested by a Canadian on Patreon and
local Canucks on our Discord.
And yeah, it was, I mean, yeah, like we mentioned this last episode, but it was a tightly fought race, and this is what eked out in the end. And yeah, their mockumentaries, their an examination of headbanger culture, and that's kind of the overarching thing. We'll get to what they're specifically about in just a moment. But yeah, it's like an interesting thing because I've seen so many New Zealand versions of this film where it's like a specific insight,
such a good way to put it,
into a subculture of New Zealand, or just like these characters that, like, oh my god, everyone's met that guy in New Zealand, and not even necessarily through the same kind of films, but you see it in like student films, you see it in like TV shows. We've had plenty of sketch shows come out of New Zealand, and so to see such a specific type of person that I've kind of encountered in my life, but this is a very localized version of that person. Like, I know people
Canadian flavored.
Yeah, I know people, you know, similar to the two main guys in FUBAR, but
Terry and Diener.
But yeah, so the first one came out in 2002. Yeah. It was directed by a guy called Michael Dowse, who I looked up to see if he's a one-hit wonder or what, but he directed Take Me Home Tonight, the Topher Grace, Anna Faris movie. Goon. But he didn't direct Goon 2.
He's the Goon guy.
He also directed Stuber.
That makes a lot of sense.
Stuber.
Okay.
Dave Bautista. Yep. Come on, Gianni. And he directed
a very similar sounding title phonetically to FUBAR.
FUBAR,
isn't
Stuber.
It? Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
He also directed a Canadian rom-com called The F Word, released in some other places as What If, which is the movie that... It was the clip I see every now and then on TikTok where Adam Driver is like, I just had sex and I'm about to eat some nachos. That's what that's from.
Okay. Presumably, What If is also what people tend to log for their Marvel rankings when before all the What If episodes get uploaded. Yeah, man. Let's talk about FUBAR because, like you said, This must be what it's like when I show friends from other countries like
Fred Dagg
clips, right? Like this was eye opening because we talked a little bit about this at the end of the Rio episode, but these films were not even close to being on my radar before people started suggesting them 2 weeks ago, and I think that's interesting because I could probably name you maybe 2 to 3 other franchises we have ever covered in which I personally haven't at least been had a passing familiarity with.
Like what?
Right? I reckon Boondock Saints I'd never heard of, which is a very comparable franchise to FUBAR in a lot of ways. It's
Bostonian FUBAR.
Bostonian FUBAR, these indie. Do you know why I said that? It's because I thought indie, but then like the same way you might describe something as Spielbergian.
Yeah.
So I went indie Ian. These indie duologies that come out of like some passionate creative voice who is then, you know, like swept up in it and gets a career out of how successful these lo-fi movies are. Genre-wise, very different to Boondock Saints. The other one I remember was, I think I'd heard the title before, but I knew nothing about Fright Night before we rolled that. Look at us now, veritable Fright Night experts, and maybe the same can be said for FUBAR in a couple of years. Maybe we'll look back on FUBAR with the same reverence.
Yes, perhaps we shall. AJ, can you tell me at least what the first film is about?
Sure. So we mainly follow two friends who are in probably their early 20s, kind of slacker metalheads. If I was being callous, I would say. Losers, headbangers.
Yeah.
Their names are Terry and Dean, and I thought it was their friend initially, but they don't seem to like the guy. There's a filmmaker named Ferris who is following them around with a camera, wanting to capture a documentary of this subculture in, I think, Toronto, is it set?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Canada, certainly.
Canada, certainly. It's like The Love Actually of
Alberta.
Canada's Alberta, I apologize. Yeah, and it would be tempting to say it's one of these films which you so often see in indie comedies that's, you know, you could describe it as being about nothing. Mm. I think there's some Napoleon Dynamite DNA in this film, and that's a famous film that when I first saw it, I was shocked at how nothing the film is about. Mm. But I don't actually know if that's necessarily true of FUBAR, because you read the Wikipedia plot synopsis or you read any kind of like quickly written synopsis and it gives the flavor of this comedy that's not really about anything. But I disagree. This is about a man who's dealing with his testicular cancer.
It's like it's a yeah, it's a bad Paddleton.
It's a bad Paddleton, right?
Yeah, it's like a road movie because one has cancer.
Yeah, so Dean, it turns out he has testicular cancer, and it's treatable, but he has to get his bowel removed. That was my first attempt at a Canadian accent for this episode. Wow. And it's, you know, the stakes never feel quite as high as he's definitely going to die. It's more just like, well, I'm getting surgery. We should go have a bender before I get my ball taken away from me. So they go, and this is by all means not the inciting incident. We're well into the third act by now. They go on a camping trip with this filmmaker guy named Ferris, who is growing increasingly less and less tolerant of just sort of the fact that these guys are like objectively bad people. Like they steal, they taunt, they, you know. I liked this movie somewhat. I did not feel I would like the characters in real life. Yeah. I think they would bully me, and I would find it good for my mental health to cut them out of my life. That's how I felt when I thought about hanging out with them. But yeah, they get really drunk, and then the next day they go to this river where, spoilers for maybe the only thing of consequence that happens in FUBAR, they are jumping into the whitewater rapids because it's their favorite jumping spot, and they convince Ferris, who really doesn't want to do it, he decides to jump in, and he dies. Hits his head or something while jumping in. They see his body floating adrift, and then they go to his funeral, and the film just kind of ends with them being like, here's to Ferris, and it's, you know, they crack open a couple of beers on his gravestone and pour one out and then leave the cans there as if this would be like a fitting tribute, but they actually kind of, he would hate this, right? Yeah. So it's a very mean-spirited movie, but at the same time, it's like, I could see this being a revelation to young Canadian men in 2002 when it came out.
Yeah. It is interesting, and obviously because these characters are in the film, it's the film is endorsing all of their actions.
Well, of course, naturally.
Yeah. So you say you liked the film somewhat?
Look, I'm partial to like a good snapshot of a subculture that typically, there's a lot of films like FUBAR, right? We've already gone over a couple of them already, and I think there's always going to be something charming about seeing someone else's culture clearly represented to what they would call as like so pinpoint accurate. But there's also a flip side to that, which is a lot of it is like, well, I'm sure this is hysterical in Alberta. Here it just kind of is someone talking kind of funny, and I think there is a lot of that. And I'm not saying, like, I'm sure that's true of like Eagle vs Shark, a film I actually don't like. that's from New Zealand but feels comparable to this one. You know what I mean?
I didn't like the film, really. I just wasn't super interested in it. Never really. Mm-hmm. I didn't really laugh out loud at any point, or even really. Fuck.
Heavens, no! I didn't laugh out loud.
Or like, I didn't even really chuckle or be that amused by anything until about halfway through the second film. It's a dime a dozen as far as I'm concerned. But it's one of those things that's like, this is in broad strokes, like, the kind of movie I want to support. Like, this is a success, you know, like, it premiered at this film festival that premiered Blair Witch.
It was a Sundance.
Mm.
Sundance.
Yeah, there was...
Sundance, correct.
Yeah. But there was, like, some... the Midnight Madness slot. Yeah, or whatever. Mm. But yeah, oh no, that was for the second one, sorry. I don't know. There was some... The time slot that premiered and was the same as Blair Witch.
I think what you're saying is that you deeply support the 2024 version of this kind of movie, right?
The hell are you talking about? This one came out in 2002, AJ.
I know, I'm saying like the indie comedies, the localized indie comedies that premiere at Sundance now, I feel are a lot more probably by and large to my taste than something like FUBAR would be.
Yeah.
So in theory, great job, everyone. The film itself, it's okay.
Yeah. Good on, it looks like everyone had fun and good on you guys. Like you made a film and like that's so hard to do. What's your history with like headbanger culture? You know, is that something you ever dabbled in? Did you ever have friends? What are your most headbangery traits? Any music you like? You know, answer those questions one by one for me, please. Thank you.
Yeah, so the closest I would say that I've been to being a headbanger is my older brother, and when we were in high school, maybe when he was just out of high school, he identified with a clique or a scene, whatever they're called, which you don't really see represented a lot anymore. They called themselves HXC or Hardcore, which is sort of like, more like a more intellectual but doubly as brutal version of headbangers. Yeah, I think the hardcore is like,
well, straight edge.
Yeah. I feel like there was more thought gone into the art than what you would typically see with something like headbanger music, though who am I to say? And their answers to mosh pits were a lot more brutal than like a regular mosh pit. And I found myself in a couple of these mosh pits in my mid to high school years. But no, never beyond that, I would say I found that the characters in this like woefully unrelatable to me. Other than I've met one or two New Zealand versions of Dina.
We would call them bogans here.
I guess so, as
a lot more closer. But yeah, any headbanger music that you're guilty pleasure?
I mean, the one band I've ever listened to, Me Without You, would not be described as anything too far away from headbanger.
They covered
music.
A Nirvana song in Bloom for the Nevermind 20th anniversary.
That's true. It's a very non-headbangery cover of that song.
It was when they were going through their acoustic folky days. Stage, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. their early stuff was very HXC and so headbanger adjacent, I guess.
Yeah.
What about you?
I've always been like a rock fan, and there's something cathartic about certain headbangery bands. Like the sort of... I was going to say Holy Trinity, but there's four of them. The Holy Quartet out of Seattle, the grunge. But, like, grunge is also its own subgenre. But, yeah, like, you know, Alice in Chains, Nirvana, Soundgarden, and Pearl Jam. Big fans of all those bands. Less so Alice in Chains, but I do like their stuff. I just haven't listened to as much.
What's an Alice in Chains song that I would know? I don't think I can think of what they
would
sound like.
Wood is a big one. And they've got like two sort of main ones. And to the flood again, same old shit would be.
Okay, it sounds a lot like Creed.
Yeah. And Man in a Box is the other big one. But yeah, like, it's crazy, just Alice in Chains, they had like two lead singers. And one of them, like, died of a drug overdose in mid-2000s or early 2010s or something, and, like, wasn't found for, like, 2 weeks. It's just crazy that, like, you can be, you know, the lead singer of one of the biggest bands in the world, and then in 2002, actually, same year as Fubar, just die and no one notices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's depressing. Yeah. What hope is there for us peons down here in the mud?
Yeah, he died like a month before Fubar came out. Interesting. Lane Staley. But yeah, no, like there's a few headbangery bands that I like, but I've associated with some people like this in my life. The most prominent one, I would say, and it's not exactly a flattering comparison, and he'll be listening to this, is our friend Tyler. But just
I knew you were gonna say that.
Yeah.
Well, what does that say about Tyler that I knew you were gonna say Tyler? well, no, to be fair, and I'm sure he's okay with us giving this a shout out, I don't think it's a secret project. He's made like a pretty similar
I did think that
feature.
There may be developments for that coming up, but yeah, it's.
Let's not say any more, Tyler. Sorry if I've spoiled too much. I know you did a screening of it, which makes me think it's out in the open. But if not, we'll hit you up before this episode goes out to make sure you don't mind us talking. What was it called again? It's called
The Ruckus.
The Ruckus. Mm. Yeah,
but shout out to Tyler and The Ruckus. But yeah, a lot of this film, I was like, man, I could easily put my friend Tyler into this situation.
The Ruckus is better than Fubar. We can cut all this out. Sorry to go into it, but The Ruckus was a film Tyler sent us as like, hey, what do you guys think of this?
Hey, I took an editing night class and put this together.
Yeah, exactly. And because I didn't have any other context and I started watching it, and a lot of it is using footage from when Tyler and his friends were actually children.
Hmm.
And it wasn't until like halfway through that I realized I was not watching a documentary, that he'd just repurposed stuff he'd shot as a kid for a mockumentary. And when we saw it, it wasn't in like a finished cinema ready version, but we should return to this with Tyler, because I thought that was actually pretty good. We should cut all this out if he doesn't want it in there.
So, yeah, any final thoughts on Fubar and less about The Ruckus?
Yeah, I forgot the title of The Ruckus before, but I would like to talk about titles, something we do often on this podcast. And I think this is potentially a seamless transition into the second film of what's going to be another record shortest episode of.
I reckon. Yeah, let's keep this like 45 minutes.
I want to talk about titles because, and this is such a, you know, the people for whom this film is in their lifeblood will probably hate that I'm going to say this. Call the film Bangers. Why is it called Fubar? It is such a non-specific, like going into it, I thought the band was going to be called Fubar or something like that, right? But it's not. The phrase is never mentioned in either film. I know it stands for fucked up beyond all repair. I've seen Saving Private Ryan, which is where it's met, where I first heard
and
it.
And the Arnold Schwarzenegger show that came out last year, which I thought was associated with this. Every time Jake would suggest this on our Patreon, he's like, it's this indie film that got a sequel with a bigger budget. And I always thought, I know they got Arnold Schwarzenegger for the sequel. But no, they didn't. It's nothing to do with it.
I get that Fubar is like a catch-all term, you know, you're being promised chaos, I guess. But like, I would have the same problem if the film was called Chaos, you know? Yeah. Like this is a film, this is the definitive film about bangers. The film should be called Bangers. I think it writes itself, and it is silly to not call the film something Bangers or Headbangers or
Bangers and Mash,
whatever the subculture, Bangers and Mash, whatever the subculture that's being represented.
It should have like a ball pun in it.
Well, the second one, I believe, has like an alternate title.
Segwaying myself here. But yeah, Fubar 2 came out in 2010.
I aided your wonderful segue.
Fubar 2, a.k.a. Fubar Balls to the Wall, a.k.a. Fubar Gods of Blunder. Now, I didn't stutter there. It's not Gods of Wonder. It's actually Blunder.
But also, another title which feels like the creative parties involved aren't really thinking about what they're doing for a title. Like, what does Gods of Blunder mean to the film? That never comes up. Like,
yeah, it should.
Oh, because AJ, it's a pun on Gods of Thunder. No, I understand that, everybody. I understand the pun. I'm saying, like, at the very least, they could say these words in the films.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so lazy to me.
Yeah.
It's like what the characters would name the movie, which maybe is a
It should be called like titles. Terry and Dean Get Mean or something.
That's a great, like a Harold and Kumar kind of thing. Terry and Dean film. Terry and Dean make a movie, and Terry and Dean
get a job.
Go to Mount. Get a job. Great. Yeah. We've done it. We've given these films much better titles.
Yeah, so this is again directed by Michael Dowse. This one is... I didn't tell you what the first one is on Rotten Tomatoes today.
No, probably like in 70s, 80s, I would think.
No, 55%.
Oh, so it's not even well received. Okay.
And then what do you think the second one has?
This like festival, this indie festival darling gets 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. Who gives a shit?
What do you think the second one has?
So I know this has a higher Letterboxd average rating. Mm. So I would guess, again, probably the 80 in the 80s, maybe?
90.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is one of these things, though, where, of course, the people who are even seeing this movie are the diehard fans of the first one. So I don't know if it's a... Like, more people will have seen the first one than the second one, I would think.
Yeah, I could see that. But I thought this one was better.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
What's it about?
It is about... So it's set 5 years later. Dean's been 5 years cancer-free since getting his nut removed. They find out they're being evicted from their like shitty flat, and so they go. Where do they go? What's the place they go to?
Fort McMurray.
They go there with a character from the first one, the person I saw myself in the most, or at least who I think I'll look like in probably 10 years. they call him Tron, who in the first film is like, he used to be one of the guys but got a girlfriend, and she very reasonably explains why she didn't. Like, it's one of these things, right, where it's like, yeah, in real life, she's perfectly reasonable and so much better for Tron's life than Terry and Dean, but in the film it's of course painted like she's some kind of Yoko figure breaking up the gang, but they have since broken up in between films, and he is like fallen off the wagon hard and is now basically...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lunatic, but he gets them a job working at like an oil pipeline in Fort McMurray, because you earn a lot. And while they're there, Terry is doing a pretty good job, like he can do it. Dean is fucking useless and wants to get out of the work as soon as possible. There's this whole storyline. This stuff, I'm going to describe what happens in the film, not necessarily in order. It's just sort of like there's storylines happening at the same time. Dean decides he wants to get a workplace injury that will get him out of work and give him like a compensation so that he doesn't have to work. Tron finds out about this and helps him for a cut of the money, but and they like break Dean's leg. It's pretty fucking brutal. But you know, that doesn't end up happening, and then they both everyone gets laid off basically at some point around the same time. Terry starts hooking up with Trish, who's a woman who's sort of mutual friends with everyone at Fort McMurray. We find out in what is a very 2010s hilarious misogynistic plot thread, she has had sexual relations with almost every character. I know you have feelings on Trish as a character.
Feelings for Trish.
I'll just set the scene well, so doesn't everyone? I'll set the scene before we can analyze the character a little more. She is like a very, I think she's designed to be a super annoying, unlikable woman, right? Yeah. Like, she causes all this drama. She ends up like hooking up with Dean and then says she's pregnant with Terry's baby, but Terry knows he can't have kids, so he knows it's Dean's baby. She, when he brings this up to her, she does this classic thing of being like, how dare you bring that up? You just want me to feel like I'm a whore.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like dialogue, Richard, I haven't seen in decades. Yeah. You know, in a lot of ways, just this unabashedly terribly written female character. Like, it just feels very familiar.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning, I can't remember if I've said, but like, both films are unscripted and just completely improvised. You know, this scene, this needs to happen.
Yeah, and I feel like the first one is a lot more harmless. I feel like the second one puts itself out there a lot more as being more like slut-shamey and problematic. Like, it's this interesting trend we've noticed a lot where I think some of the most problematic films to ever be made came out in 2010 to 2016. You know, like, it's not a case of it petered off and then the Me Too movement happened. For a lot of these films, it's like, nope. Anchorman 2 came out in 2013. Mm. You know, like, it's right up to the cutoff for a lot of these cases. And the other big thing that happens is, what I thought was pretty funny is Dean's testicular cancer comes back in his other nut, and we find out that it's because he never had a single follow-up appointment or treatment after getting his ball removed from the first one. So he has to get his second ball removed, and finding out this happened is sort of what brings the damaged friendship of Terry and Dean back together after they have a fight about Trish. But before all this happens, and content warning for like suicide being treated very, let's say, trivially in this film, Tron and Dean decide that their lives are not worth living and form a suicide pact, only for... Dean is planning to do this the day after Christmas, but on Christmas Eve performs karaoke with everyone and discovers, and what's the best plot point of the whole series, I think, that because he's had his two balls removed, he can now sing beautifully. Like, and it gives him a reason to live. We haven't mentioned this, but Dean has a daughter in both films. She's grown up and well, she's like 10 or so in the second film, and you know, she really loves him, and he sort of is able to recontextualize his life just in time for the ghost of Ferris to come and appear before him, and what firmly settled this movie as not a mockumentary, even though the first one is. Like, it's filmed the same way, but there's no mention of a filmmaker or a film crew in the second one, which the only other time I can think of this happening where like a specific format has just not been adapted for the sequel is like 10 Cloverfield Lane not being a found footage to Cloverfield being a found footage. It's that sort of thing. And he decides he's not going to kill himself anymore. Then Tron shows up and is like, no, we made a pact. They fight. He convinces him also not to kill himself. And it ends with... Dean singing beautifully at Trish and Terry's wedding, where they welcome their son, who looks a lot like Dean. And that's sort of where FUBAR 2 ends us.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed this film more, but I think that it was just this film had something to get me on board with it. And I think it's going to be one of those things where I'm probably going to be an outlier in this. But I loved the character of Trish. But I'm talking about that, like, she like, the reason I loved her is that she is designed to be the worst possible character. And looking at it from a filmmaking perspective, an improv perspective, we know a girl, let's get her in the film kind of perspective, that, like, being
the actor's doing a great job.
Being able to, but also being able to reverse engineer what she was told at the start of each scene. She does an incredible job. Like that, she has, because so things like when I'm going to mix. It's when Terry confronts her that she slept with Dean. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
That she. That it's like before the scene starts, it's like, okay, he's going to confront you about this. No matter what, this is his fault. You know, you did nothing wrong. Just the amount of different ways in that scene, all clearly off the top of her head, that she goes about this, finding different ways to blame him for what happened, or like why he's the bad guy for calling her out on it. I was just like, yeah, I was, that character is having so much fun. I was having a lot of fun watching her, and she's the one that if we were making this film, you and I, then after every take you'd be like, fuck, she's good. Where does she come up with this shit? Like and that was the reason I really got into that Trish character, because it's like I related to her on a filmmaking level, you know?
You take what you can get when you're watching a movie you're not that into, right?
just the manipulation and steadfastness in all of her like horrible beliefs. it was funny. And then so because I had that about sort of halfway through the film, I was able to then invest a little bit more in the second half than I had in any of the first film.
I understand. Yeah, I think. Again, I found it difficult to get on board the second film just because of how much more like this is from the like Seinfeld school of comedy writing, where it's like whatever the worst, however bad a person can be, that's how bad your main character is. You know, like very, very sort of what's the word?
Seinfeldian.
Irredeemable. Irredeemable, I think. Like, very irredeemable characters. And I felt there's already, like, a depression to starting the movie, being like, all right, these characters are, like, worse people than they were at the end of the first one, you know? Even if that is maybe more realistic and certainly more funnier. But then at the end you have those twists where it's like he can sing better because he's had his balls removed, which is honestly like this should have maybe been the wrap up to the first film. Like if you've got your film is about like a metalhead who is getting a ball removed, surely this is the neat little bow you tie around the story, around the first story. But you know, despite that, they put it in this one, and I think it certainly made me like sort of perk up a little. What did you think of the ghost of Ferris showing up? Any feelings on that? Insane.
Yeah.
Stupid. Didn't like it.
Ruined the film.
Well, in general, Ferris dying, how did you feel about that? Because that's the kind of plot point which would have ruined this. The mask is slipping, Richard. Yeah, I was looking at my phone when Ferris died. because like that's the kind of plot point that I could see 13 to 23-year-old AJ, maybe even 24, 25-year-old AJ being like, it ruins the film. Like, I could see myself being like, hey, killing off a character is such a tonal whiplash, and it like betrays the like the level that the film is at, and no one really cares, and it feels so cold-hearted. Now I kind of don't see it.
Yeah,
or at least I can look through the film, the perspective of the filmmaker, and see that like,
something has to happen.
Obviously, it was something has to happen, and I think if I were directing the first film, I would have at least made Ferris's death be way more consequential and what have be like that's what the film turns into.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
I
really.
Kind of saw it coming, or I saw a tragedy coming, because I was like, it's just like because one thing has to happen in this film. And so So I wasn't particularly surprised by it or anything like that. But yeah, I think not like a total emotional change or like bringing this depth, but Yeah, just needed to... It would have been good if it happened earlier in the film, maybe, and then we got, like, kind of a Mean Creek thing where it's about, like, what do we do with the body? Yeah. Or even, like, a Two Little Boys thing, which is another, like, hyper-localized film. But the...
Well, that's because the Two Little Boys, the accidental murderer is in the first scene. Like, it's the premise of the film, you know?
Yeah, but... any much else to say? Have you ever shotgunned a beer?
No.
Yeah.
I don't really like beer, and certainly not enough to have ever shotgunned it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've shotgunned anything.
Yeah, well, you generally only shotgun beer. Yeah, you do. You also, if you are going to do it, you generally want to do it with, like, a lighter beer. You wouldn't want to do this with, like, an IPA. But, yeah, I've shotgunned beers back in my day.
Anyway, I've got this IPA right here.
I was going to get, get some beer, but I didn't get a chance. Because I live in the part of Auckland where you can't get alcohol at the supermarket. So I have to go specifically to a liquor store to get it. And I, couldn't be bothered. But, I was going to shotgun a beer live on pod. Maybe I'll do it for a Patreon episode or something. It's been a while since I've shotgunned a beer.
There's plenty.
Yes.
There's plenty to mine for a potential film franchise follow-ups. Because despite this being a duology, the Chronicles of Fubar, I am to understand, are not over and done with. Just
That's right. So, Fubar Age of Computer, released in 2017, which is an 80-episode television series, ran on Vice Canada. And it's them exploring the internet for the first time. And
and when, sorry?
2017. And it has real life interactions with experts and influencers and stuff. So I think it's, you know, part like them interviewing people and character and shit. And then there's also TNT Fubar as well, which is Terry back in Calgary.
So Dina's not in that one.
I guess, yeah.
It's funny because I imagine it's just a case of, like, these actors and maybe the director, they just own the rights to this intellectual property that no one else in the world really wants to do anything with. So they're like, we'll make it.
Well, it's like they're also like the writers and shit. But also there was a mobile game as well called Fubar, Just Give Her. Which came out in 2020.
Just Give Her.
But then also...
Wow. Can we just appreciate that none of these spin-offs are capitalizing on the films, like, being relevant? Like, they're all, like, almost a decade later, or in some cases literally the phone game that came out in
2022
later.
Was the TNT so Fubar. There's also... There's a... Terry's based on an earlier character from the actor's stand-up or something. He's also, there's a Trailer Park Boys spin-off called Trailer Park Boys Jail, and Terry's in that.
So there's direct connection to Trailer Park Boys in this then, because that's the...
It's like the feuding dropkick Canadian properties.
Yeah, right. The other Canadian property I wanted to bring up that this all kind of reminds me of, it's a completely different subculture, and I'd be curious to know if Dave and Jake, who championed Fubar, our local Canadians, if they have any particular feelings or know this franchise. It started out as a web series, and then they made like an 8-episode TV show around the same time as I think Fubar 2. Pure Ownage, spelled Pure Pwnage. It was like a pre-YouTube series about being a gamer, and it was very Canadian and got very silly and was very, very lo-fi. And is where, like, a lot of my tech crew friends in high school got their, like, cool leet speak lingo from, because they'd be like, lol, like, lol. Do you know what else it reminds me of? It's around the same era as Strong Bad. It's like, the people that were watching Pure Ownage were massive Strong Bad fans as well.
Damn.
So it's a similar, and I think that's right. This is why I'm conflating them, is because there's an episode of, what's the Strong Bad show called?
Well, there's Homestar Runner is the overarching.
Homestar Runner. There's an episode of Homestar Runner where Strong Bad answers emails.
This is the Strong Bad emails.
No, it's the other way around. There's an episode of Pure Ownage that's a parody of the Strong Daddy Mail section where they film it from behind and it's framed the same way as the cartoon. Nice. Yeah. And that, yeah, again, like this very Canadian property that had like a TV show kind of too late for it to cash in on the success of the initial
possibly the most exciting development in the FUBAR series is that... FUBAR are doing a live tour next week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, see, we were getting depressed this week because we found out that if Agent Cody Banks had slipped ahead of the feud last week, we would have been releasing the episode the week of its 21st anniversary, which, you know, it's obviously it would be a big significant milestone. But this is just as good.
Yeah, it's
just in time for the FUBAR national tour of Canada.
If you're in Saskatchewan,
I'm going to be in Canada later this year.
Maybe they'll still be touring.
Find some of the locations of the FUBAR team.
So we do have to now pitch our own continuations of the franchise. AJ, what is yours?
Well, before finding out there was a TV show, I did have this thing where I was like, how is this not a TV show? Like, this feels way more
Turns out it is.
But what it isn't, and yet another property I'm going to compare FUBAR to, is where I've taken my inspiration for this continue the franchise, is this is very much the Canadian Clerks, I think. And Clerks had an animated series, and I think this is exactly the kind of show that would translate very well to like a Comedy Central animated series that's a little bit more surreal than the movies, but like the voice cast come back because of course they
do. What else are they doing?
Yeah, I could easily see a FUBAR, the animated series, coming out of this, and it wouldn't do very well on TV, but it would kill in DVD sales. or at least it would have.
Yeah, my continuation of the franchise. So part of what they originally were going to do for the second one, before they came up with the plot line, was going to be that like Terry and Dean take on Hollywood, and. It's weird that neither of these films are really fish out of water films, because you have these two like specifically localized characters, and also I want to say as well, I think bad character design, these two guys, that if you have two main characters, they should look different, they should be completely distinguishable. That it's like
well, Dean had a weird eye, that was kind of how
and he has a moustache. But but Dean's weird eye, like a slightly lazy eye. It doesn't look like a lazy eye. It looks like he's always just half cut or like half asleep. So I did find that funny.
Or like his eye is bulging out of the socket.
One of them, they should be blonde or a short hair, or just be taller than the other one or something like that. They're indistinguishable. But that's also, I guess, part of the gag. But like these, I think that you take very specific characters that work, that exist because of a specific scene and look a certain way, don't fit in, then it's like, you take those characters and you put them somewhere they don't belong. Like, surely that's what you do with this. And you can,
if not for the original, then surely
you've got a bigger budget. And so you go take, you know, make it, get fucking Alan Thicke in there and Geddy Lee from Rush. What? Like, get all your big Canadian names. I think Alan Thicke's dead, but but get them all.
Alan Thicke's dead?
I think so.
I'm thinking of
that's his son, yeah.
Apologies.
Alan Thicke was a big deal. Is he dead? Yeah, he died in 2016. You know, get Rush in there. Jason Priestley, Alanis Morissette, Ryan Reynolds,
Justin Bieber,
Jim Carrey.
Speaking of the moustache you mentioned before, one insight I think I have into this film that exists because I've been dabbling in filmmaking myself is at the end, after Dean, like, they do differentiate him by the end of the first film because he's bald from chemo. And the doctor says to the camera, I don't know how the chemo didn't get rid of his mustache. It's really quite a medical miracle. And do you know why that line's in there, Richard? I bet that they made it all the way through before someone watched the film and went, yeah, he would lose his mustache. And they're like, oh, we got to get a line that just at least acknowledges this. It's a Robert McKee tip from Robert McKee's story as to if you've got something like that in the film. Like, I think there's a, he uses an example from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where they like fall off a cliff and then when they hit the bottom and survive, one of them is like, how did we survive that? And it nullifies any criticism you could throw at the movie for being unrealistic.
Yeah. There's, hanging a lampshade on it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, that's the podcast. Yeah. No, we have to rank it, eh?
See ya. Oh, my God. What interesting. Yeah, okay. So we've got to rank FUBAR. How are you feeling generally about it as a franchise?
Bad.
Because I'm struggling here to really think of it, to really call it anything more than like pretty about as forgettable as it was before I found out it existed.
Yeah.
Like,
my life has not changed at all.
It's very unremarkable to me. Yeah, but at the same time, I'm leaning towards above the Nymphomaniac constant at least because it is more good than bad. It's just not particularly interesting, which I'd put in a similar camp to something like the Mighty Ducks, which I believe is actually quite close.
Yeah,
to
Yeah, I think it's constant. Worse than Nymphomaniac.
Do you do? Yeah. Okay. Well, what are
so
we
above Nymphomaniac we have Speed, below we have Silence of the Lambs.
Right, but whenever we do this, we forget that we're taking in the like the weight of the sequel. Like, I know Speed's a good movie, but Cruise Control, a worse movie than both FUBAR movies, I would think. No, I actually quite liked Speed 2 Cruise Control, now that I think about it.
Fuck it. Okay, it's going between Speed and Mighty Ducks. There you go. 95.
I think that's a good place
okay,
for
fine.
It. Yeah, 95.
Jesus Christ, AJ. Give him a bloody inch, he'll take a bloody mile. All right. AJ, do you want to... are we announcing what we're doing next fortnight?
Yeah, I think so. So usually this is the point in the show where we either do franchise roulette or if it was a Patreon week, we'd look to the Patreon for the next franchise we're covering. But we do have a special guest on next week and it would be very funny to imply they picked this franchise. It's more just the sad combination of both of our podcast subjects is resulting in next week, if you're wanting to watch along, and they're not easy films to find, well, the sequel is, we are going to watch the animated bargain bin franchise Space Chimps and Space Chimps 2 with a special guest.
Space Chimps 2 has Zartog Strikes Back.
I didn't know that. Interesting. So yeah, that's what we're doing next week. If you enjoyed this episode, then please consider following
us
on
time,
Patreon.
We'll doing that. Next following week, us- there oh, won't true. Be an episode. Off weeks are done for a while. AJ.
Only happening when needed.
Yeah, AJ said he was going to pull out of them at the start of the year, so I've known that's coming for a while. But I just... being in a play and having rehearsals, that my life is, I've managed to fill my life with more things than I thought I would. And so I think the next off week, which actually isn't as far away as it sounds, will be the mid-year self-indulgent quiz. And then at that point, June or July, whenever it is, we'll reassess moving forwards.
Nice. Sounds good. So please follow us on Instagram and Twitter. You can also jump in our Discord, tell us your favorite FUBAR joke. And stay tuned for the post-credits scene coming after this music ends. You can jump on our Patreon if you want to get involved in that. There's a bunch of other goodies on there. So yeah, thank you very much for listening, eh? Didn't do a lot of Canadian accents on this episode, even though I bet that's what people were hoping, eh?
Yeah.
Welcome along to the post-credits scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode. If you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about, and this, the post-credits scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Today's comes to us from Joshua Cole, who writes, what makes a good post-credits scene question?
Something that's very easy to answer, that doesn't require any kind of prep beforehand, because which has happened. We get questions where it's like, this is such a good question, and I know if I had a couple of weeks to think about it, I would come up with something good. But unfortunately, we're flying by the seat of our pants here.
Yeah, there's so many where I'm like, I know an answer to this. I just can't think of it right now. We need to do like an episode where we just revisit post-credit scenes questions now that we've had more time to think about them.
What a great off-week suggestion that would be. Do you know what? I reckon the best post-credit scenes are ones that are like, what's better, apples or bananas? Because that's just immediate, like, red-hot opinion off the cuff. Like, I can answer that right away. The answer's apples by a country mile.
Yeah, I like having a chance to... tell boring stories from my own life. I like when something is just Richard, talk about this dumb bullshit that you went through.
Something that's technically an answer to the question. Yeah. I think this is great fodder because we need more post-credit scenes and people just don't send them in with the fervor they used to. So if you're looking for ideas, we've just given you a bunch here.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.